This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 4th of August, 2022, and a very strong day for equity markets. Certainly the most speculative sectors, the broader S&P 500 not rallying as much as the NASDAQ 100. And if you look on our equity theme baskets on slide two, you see the likes of bubble stocks having a banner day up 5.7%. Peter, is this a sign of great things to come here for this market? I think we're still shaking our heads a little bit, but of course we have no information value on when this this run higher is going to find some resistance.
No, I like your sarcasm, John. I am scratching my head a little bit here on these bubble stocks. We have talked about it. It's a recurring theme. I mean, is this the ultimate bear rally trap? I guess we're going to find out eventually. But you're right. The yesterday's performance was very strong, and it's as you indicate in your headline. It was the ISM services sector was very, very strong, much stronger than expected, and a little bit at odds with other PMI indices we have seen lately. And the Chicago Fed National Activity Index in the U.S. has actually went negative in June. So there is a slowdown, but we didn't see that in that survey. And rates were higher. So I'm a little bit confused about this reaction function in equities. I will highlight, though, cybersecurity stocks being the best performer yesterday, 6% up. It seemed like a lot of investors are steering their flows towards cybersecurity and a little, less towards defense stocks right now. And there was a lot of different types of cybersecurity attacks on Taiwanese infrastructure during the Pelosi visit. And we know the Russians are also extremely active around the globe over this whole war in Ukraine. So and I'll talk more about cybersecurity because one of the largest companies reported earnings yesterday. And I think it's a really good lens into what to expect going forward for this industry.
Yeah, so on the, just to highlight what that ISM services survey, where it came in, 56.7, expected 53.5, the prior number around that level as well, 53 something. And this versus this S&P Global survey at 47.3, showing the services sector in the U.S. in outright recession. What are we supposed to take away from these surveys? I mean, it's just a crazy divergence there and really makes you less secure about how much you understand what's going on here. The new orders index on the ISM services at 59. That's a very strong number. But we do know that the services side, even though it's bigger and the most important factor in the U.S. economy, does tend to lag the manufacturing side of things, at least in historical cycles. So there you have it. But in any case, it's still interesting to see. We did see yields popping higher on the back of that services release. It sort of came back to unchanged. But nonetheless, if you look at the yield curve itself, it's getting towards this modern record inversion. When I say modern, I mean basically post the sort of 2000-2001 as we're heading into that recession. And Peter, you put up a chart on slide three. It looks pretty inverted, minus 38 basis points. But I'm still wondering if these inflationary outcomes that the market is predicting are going to be very benign. We have the market predicting a series of rate cuts next year from the Fed. The Fed saying it's not going to cut. If the Fed's view turns out being the right one, and we still are heading towards a recession next year, which is likely the case, that yield curve inversion could get profound and something we haven't seen basically since the 1970s.
Yeah, I'm not a huge subscriber to the soft landing. I see too many signs for that to not be the case, at least in my mind. I don't know how to interpret this this chart, John. I mean, if you look, I mean, we have very few independent cases to draw statistics from. But most of the times when we have this inversion, it's a forewarning of bad market performance and the economy going down. I think as Steen mentioned in the internal call, I think Bridgewater has been calling, Jeffrey Gundlach from Double Line Capital has said it herself. I mean, we're probably facing a stagflationary environment. And that's the tricky part because it means that you feel there is growth because it is nominal, but in real terms, you're actually seeing a declining living standards. And it's a very tricky environment, both for trading, but also certainly for investing. And I think the stagflation means that it's more difficult to interpret what this really means when we invert to this point.
And I may have defeated my own point because let's look at that forward market view. That forward market view is that inflation will normalize and the Fed will have the luxury of cutting rates. Well, what if we're confronted with the real stagflationary scenario? The market is absolutely not priced for that. And what does it then do to reprice longer term interest rates when it realized that inflation to some degree has become unanchored. So it's a massive question out there looming over the horizon. If this inflation does not shape up as expected, that is the grand macro surprise relative to what market is pricing. And I certainly think for equities, that is the case. All right, let's zoom into now. I think it's an important story. We need to track this. It's not just about this Dutch natural gas forward, which we know has been very elevated. It's actually slightly down from where it has been recently. It's the length of time we've been at these very elevated levels that is key. On slide four, putting up that natural gas contract, the forward contract, and the German power contract 1 month forward, you can see it's at similar levels. Also, again, it's the amount of time it's been elevated, but there are other complicating factors that are just turning this into a potential disaster for Europe. Can't emphasize enough the risk to the European economy going into the winter. It's not just about the risk that as natural gas seasonality, the demand picks up into the winter. It tends to be around double what it is in the lowest summer months, which we're in currently the natural gas demand, but other one-off risks to the electricity system. And our macro strategist in France, Christopher Dembek, pointing out that we have French nuclear plants getting cut, their operations being stopped for a multitude of reasons, many of them due to these corrosion issues, which will mean that they might be offline for months and even years. And recently, that the very, very hot weather we've had here in Europe is driving heat into the rivers. That means that they cannot be cooled. So they're having to shut down additional plants because the water is simply not cool enough to cool the reactor cores, et cetera. So just a potential that the French situation is shaping up to be even worse than Germany. And then in Germany, where they're trying to switch some of the output into electrical output into the coal plants, the rivers are slow due to drought and heat that some of the coal barges are having a hard time getting to their destinations on the Rhine River, which is at record lows. So I looked at a weather forecast. It looks like this drought and heat is going to continue for another couple of weeks, but could get better later this month if these longer term climate models are correct.
Yeah, and there were also talks the other day about that the Norwegians are really, scratching their heads because they typically have very low electricity costs from hydro. The old saying was that it was so cheap that why would you turn off the lights when you went to bed? Because it almost didn't cost anything. And the interesting thing about the liberalization of the electricity markets in Europe is that every country is injecting electricity into a giant market with auctions and trading. Denmark happens to be one of the big trading places of all in this market, in Aarhus, by the way. Side story. But then what is interesting is just like when you have an interest rate policy in Europe where arguably Denmark should have a high interest rates and Italy, etc. In Norway, they look at the current electricity prices being jacked up because of the UK pulling so much electricity from Norway that the Norwegians are saying, hey guys, we're actually getting a very bad deal of actually being part of this unified electricity system. So it's just when you have these crises, it just tends to break all these systems and this this these calm periods where everything looks like it's working perfectly until it doesn't.
It's a very important point. But I will say I don't feel too sorry for Norway given what they're making on their natural
No.
gas and oil exports these days. But that's another story. Maybe a bit of Scandinavian rivalry there as well. Let's get also to two things. So we have a Bank of England meeting up today. Actually, I'll get to that in a moment. I'm going to look at first of all the just looking at tomorrow's jobs report from the U.S. And what I noted yesterday, and I've got it charted today on slide five, and that is some are noting, I've seen this from multiple sources, noting that this household survey has shown that the sort of overall jobs, sort of the payrolls, the number of payrolls is looking pretty static according to that survey. We saw a similar develop into late 2019, where it was headed sideways. Of course, we don't know how predictive it was at that time because the thing that knocked the job market for a loop then was the pandemic. But there have been previous recessions as well, where the survey did seem to show more advanced behavior than the non-farm payrolls themselves. So these are not the changes, just the absolute level of payrolls, the two surveys there. And you see the steady march higher in the non-farm, which is expected to rise another 250K on Friday for the July jobs report versus a 3 month moving average around 375K. And then interesting as well on the earnings front. But getting shortly to a little bit of short, a few comments on FX. So with the pop back higher in yields we saw yesterday, we have seen yen crosses popping back higher as well. Something like Aussie yen, which I'm showing on slide six on the left there, popping fully back into range. And this despite the rather dovish RBA relative to expectations. There was a trade imbalance report out for June overnight, reminding how much hay Australia is making off of this commodities boom, particularly LNG, with a new record surplus for the month. So Australia is managing quite well. At this point in time, I would say, however, we're at maximum positive risk sentiment, I think, relative to what's possible. So I'm curious how the Aussie behaves if we slip back into some risk off. But yen certainly following the direction of yields, and I think that will continue to be the case. Really concerned about Europe for the reasons we mentioned, the long-term into the winter with the power crisis, et cetera. So watching that, euro-dollar has been in an impossibly tight range between 101 and the high 102s over the last more than 2 weeks. Let's see if we resolve to the downside post whatever the U.S. jobs report delivers tomorrow. And then a Bank of England a meeting up today, expecting 50 basis points, very likely with a couple of dissenters on the dovish side. And what is the guidance there? The market pricing around 50 basis points, a little bit less, but assuming around 50 basis points for the following two meetings. Is the UK comfortable with guiding for that? You have the sense, general sense, although they have pulled up their credibility in some recent comments to just to get things in line with where inflation has been heading. You get the sense that they're holding their nose as they're hiking rates, knowing that a recession is incoming and that a stagflationary cost of living crisis is afoot in the UK, and the UK also affected by these power issues, of course, by the way, as winter approaches. So a very tricky task for the Bank of England to guide here. I have a hard time seeing how they guide, you know, well into the hawkish territory, at least enough to get sterling supported significantly. But, you know, could be wrong, could be a surprise there, but let's have a look at it today. Still have a few earnings rolling in here, Peter. So what's your latest on where the focus is in the equity market in terms of individual names?
Well, in the equity market here in Europe, we have Glencore and Adidas reporting this morning. And Glencore, not a big surprise. Their first half result was just stellar. They even exceeded their the estimates on the street, and they're initiating a $3 billion buyback program and 11 cent per share special dividend. So flush with cash and profits at Glencore. There was not a particular headline on the outlook itself, but I mean the outlook for metals is still very strong generally. And I think one of the things that have benefited Glencore is that they, according to my knowledge, they never really shredded their thermal coal business, unlike a lot of the other major mining companies. And thermal coal is very much bid these days. So that, of course, is benefiting Glencore, and their trading unit, I think, did something around almost $4 billion in profits in the first half. Adidas, on the other hand, is a company. I talked a little bit about it yesterday, and we've talked about it in the internal call. There's a lot of the consumer names that are showing weakness. From I mentioned Starbucks, I think, yesterday, were weaker. Just Eat is also showing bad signs. And Adidas is really troubled by, you know, sales vanishing in Ukraine and Russia for obvious reasons. They are not banned, but they are almost excluded in China because of, you know, worker issues in some of the most Western provinces on cotton. So the Adidas have been slapped on their face for commenting on that situation. Supply issues and logistics costs, of course, also eating into margins for Adidas. And then the cost of living crisis, they're commenting on that in the press release. They say they see sign that consumer spending is beginning to ease. And Adidas is definitely not a small company. To what extent Adidas has a younger crowd among their customers than, you know, the general consumer company could be the case. And I would suspect younger people are hit harder and first of the cost of living crisis. I'm guessing here, but that's it. And then Fortinet, coming back to the cybersecurity story. So Fortinet being, I think, the most valuable in terms of market capitalization company within the industry, was booking very strong results. The share price was down 10% in extended trading, but they did actually lift the guidance on some of the metrics, including operating margins. So very strong there, and they do seem to be in line with hitting that 31% revenue growth expected by the market this year, which I think is pretty impressive when you have a slowdown in the economy, by the way. And then earnings today, slide 8. Alibaba being the big one in focus, and our strategist out of the Hong Kong office, Redmond Wong, wrote a great piece yesterday about some of these new laws that have been amended, I would say, in China, because they have already done a lot of things on anti-monopoly laws in the past couple of years, but they have done new amendments, and there's just a lot of negative sentiment on these big platform companies. They got too powerful, and this common prosperity, which is the red thread here, is what's driving all these changes in policy towards the private sector, in particular the technology sector. And you can see here on slide 8 how Alibaba's share price has just been plummeting from $300 per share, above $300 per share, to less than 100 yesterday. And the market is actually expecting Alibaba to print its first negative revenue growth ever since the company was founded. So another and then in other names, Amgen on biotechnology, I would highlight, and then Block and DoorDash in the US technology sector is something to watch.
All right, that leaves us with the macro calendar for today. Again, that Bank of England announcement and how they're guiding on the balance sheet plans. So the plan supposedly for 50 to 100 billion, that's quite a range of balance sheet tightening or reduction annually, that the annual pace, how quickly they'll ramp up to that level and when they will announce it. There's something about potentially a September vote on when to begin this, but we need to get some kind of guidance on that from the Bank of England today. And then we have further bits and pieces. The US June trade balance, I think reflective of consumer demand and potentially whether some of these this inventory stories, meaning reduced trade deficits in the US. The latest weekly claims out of the US, this is always interesting because we've seen quite a trend develop. And is this trend getting aggravated or is it stabilizing after we saw those record lows earlier this year? We also have a challenger job cuts announcement up today. Some of the companies that overexpanded, especially whether because of bloated stock prices and overambitious plans to expand operations or because some of the physical world excesses of that pandemic stimulus-driven demand was saw people overexpanding capacity and logistics and delivery, et cetera. I'm thinking of Amazon there. Could mean we get a bad number there, but that may just not necessarily be as bad as one would expect if there's simply just a shift away from one side of the economy that is manufacturing and goods-related stuff to the services side of the economy. But let's see. We also have an RBA statement out overnight. The Fed's Mester, who's a voter, she's already spoken this week, is out speaking. And I think it's pretty clear that the Fed is in disagreement with the market's assessment of where Fed policy is going. We got the message. The question is, when does the market change its behavior? And we don't know on that. Then the weekly natural gas storage change out of the U.S. They need to build to get into the proper storage levels into the winter months. That natural gas price quite elevated, and of course, U.S. suppliers happy to export at current prices. So that's a longer-term situation to watch there. And then, of course, tomorrow with the U.S. jobs report, and we'll have more on that tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.